two, if not 3 years, about the presence of a lot of FBI snipers surrounding the Bundy property at the time the Bundys called in their allies to give them some protection. So there were a lot of other falsehoods in that case by the feds. And I was happy to see the judge, you know, give a hearty smacking to the Justice Department and the FBI on that.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely... and, you know, at the time, because it was a dispute over the use of federal land and all that, it wasn't as clear cut to me exactly
Absolutely.
What this man's legal position was and all that. But
yes, it's that's something which I don't think I wrote about it on even on my blog or on social media at the time. It was the first confrontation because, you know, Bureau of Land Management, rents, this, that, the other. I mean, it's a much simpler case than some of the other confrontations with the feds.
But yeah, I mean, it really does turn out that, you know, whether people, you know, find themselves in alignment with the Bundy family culturally or not, that this really was a fight that the government picked. The federal judge, imagine that, the federal judge found against the federal cops and for the civilians in this case, because they found that these guys had way overly militarized the situation from the very get-go. And that was, I think, the major reason that the judge cited for dismissing the charges and all of that. And,
well,
you know,
it was a lot of false statements by the FBI and misleading claims. That was a huge part of the case dismissal.
And, you know, the thing is about the cultural split is, as a libertarian, I don't have to pick any of those sides. And so I'm only always on the side of the victims against the cops, you know. But so in this case,
I just assumed that you were on the side of the Mormons.
Yeah, I mean, whichever side, whether it's, you know, Saddam Hussein or Vladimir Putin, I'm always against whoever
Assad.
The U.S. state
you
is against.
Assad.
In this case, yeah, I'm pro Assange and I'm pro Bundy. But no, so in this case, it seemed like the perfect time for Black Lives Matter types to say, see, the cops treat us unfairly like that all the time. That's what we're talking about, too. And for the Bundy types to say, like, hey, we know what they mean when they complain. Like the Branch Davidians had hung a sign out their window that said, Rodney King, we understand. You know, Bridge, that's true, a true thing. People can look that up. And yet, you know what was, and this is just unfortunate, and maybe it was inevitable, Jim, but I saw people, and it was an honest misunderstanding. It wasn't even that stupid of a misunderstanding. It was an honest misunderstanding that some of the Bundy people had these signs against the BLM, against the Bureau of Land Management.
Oh, here we go.
Urban black anti-cop activists thought that they were being denounced, that Black Lives Matter was being denounced by these people who were not paying attention to Black Lives Matter at all. You know, who should have been on their side, who should have seen, oh, I get it. The enemy is the state, not each other. That's pretty easy. But anyway, that was just so unfortunate. I remember arguing with on Twitter with a Black Lives Matter activist and her saying to me, look, they hate us. They're against us. And I was like, you know what? It's just a misunderstanding. It's the federal cops is what that means. It's an agency, the Bureau of Land Management. Oh, you know, like they're just like you, only different, but the same, you know. Anyway.
And that's why you left Twitter.
That's part of it, yeah, is arguing with idiots. Believe it or not, I have better things to do, too many to juggle.
Right, but to take a step back, I saw a lot of comments on Twitter at the time some of the court decisions came down in the various Bundy cases by basically a lot of, I guess, liberal left folks who would like to see them shot dead. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, bloodlust and disappointment that the feds did not kill those people. So
yeah, well,
it's the same thing that we saw in 1993 when, you know, when there were a lot of people who were happy that a lot of the Branch Davidians died. We've seen in some other federal standoffs. There was a standoff in 1996 in Montana with a bunch of, you know, farmers' home deadbeats called the Freeman. And I have a memory of having dinner with a friend and his colleagues who was an army psychiatrist who was just emphatic that the feds should just go in there and kill those people because they had disobeyed orders. And I was thinking, well, you know, that's not a good reason to start killing innocent people who haven't been convicted. But there is, you know, there's a certain segment of society that just howls for blood when folks don't bow down to the government. And it's on both sides of the aisle, or on all sides. Not all sides. It's something you'd almost never hear from a libertarian or someone who is principled, liberal or conservative.
Right. Hey, a big shout out and a thank you from me and Sheldon Richman to the guys and girls in the Tom Woods Facebook group who recently made a very generous donation to the Libertarian Institute. We sure appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Yeah, I mean, I really don't get it. Why is it easier to suffer the cognitive dissonance of saying that when cops attack white guys with guns, they're jackbooted thugs? But when they attack black guys with guns, there are hero cops saving civilization from the criminals or where. Just because you're not black, you can't see from the other side for just a minute. Or like you're saying in the other example, where the cops are going after some white guys and on TV, and then it's not always just racial, but the left in general rally behind that. And that includes, you know, racial minorities, too, like embracing finally, like you get a taste instead of see what we were arguing, see what we were saying, too. Because in that, especially, you know, which one got me, Jim, was the biker slaughter, the second Waco massacre in what, 2014? Yeah.
And nobody gives a shit, do they?
And it was such a perfect time. It was right at the heat of the Mike Brown and all of the Black Lives Matter stuff. And it was the perfect opportunity for the black police activists to say, police killing activists to say, see, man, they do it to you. They do it. This is exactly what it feels like. It sucks. Let's work together. We want to go to your protest and with you, you know? And then how hard should it really be for these Mexican and white bikers mostly to say, oh, no wonder that's what these blacks in St. Louis are complaining about. That this is what it's like to be hunted down and sniped by these lawless police with no accountability whatsoever. No right for your side of the story whatsoever, even for the survivors. That's not an opportunity for people to see each other's side and to form, you know, an alliance to say, you know, to address the real problem here, which is the lack of accountability for cops and their training that their lives are that much more important than ours, and that anybody puts their hand near a waistband, blow their head off, better safe than sorry, which is so, maybe that's good enough for occupying Palestine, but not for any kind of free society.
Right. So what's the status on the Waco shootings from a few years ago? Has that still been covered up? Because I haven't followed it closely, but it sounded like that the cops kind of lost control there. It's sort of like a.
It was the cops that did the killing. It was the cops that, okay, you know, started firing. I did, you know, at least the vast majority of it. And I'll tell you, it's I forgot exactly which publication. It may have been GQ, but the reporter's name is Nathaniel Penn. Okay. And so his article, and I interviewed him about it, and this is, you know, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. And that's the latest that I know of it. I really should try to find another further investigative piece. But essentially, the cops had these guys all surrounded with rifles, and they just started firing into the crowd and killing people.
Yep. Well, it's amazing that hasn't, you know, that the controversy did not get traction on that, because I mean, you know, there's lots of bikers who are difficult folks, and again, I wouldn't want to have them as a neighbor, but I mean, that doesn't give the police the right to kill them. And it sounded like that, and there was so much cover up going on as far as the so many different elements of that. I'm just amazed that the government got away with as much of the cover up as they had, as far as I can tell.
Well, that's true. Yeah, no, there was, you know, this outrage where they just rounded up and arrested and indicted everybody, yep, you know, in order to try to cover up what they were doing. And the whole thing is completely ridiculous in the worst way, ridiculous, you know.
It almost made me cynical.
Yeah. And, you know, I shouldn't say the second Waco massacre because I know there have been previous Waco massacres too. But the second in my era.
Sure. Sure.
Anyway. So this is the new Attorney General. Oh, you know what? So wait, as long as I got you, and I don't think I'm on anybody else's interview time, can I keep you for a minute?
Sure.
So let's talk about when George Bush Sr. was a lame duck and pardoned all the Iran-Contra guys. And it was Barr that helped him do it, right?
You got it. You got it. Yeah, it was. That was something I wrote about last month in USA Today. I was happy.
I knew there was another one by you about this.
Yep.
I couldn't find it this morning, man. I'm sorry. Go ahead about that.
Well, USA Today is hard to find. I'm making a joke, actually, you know. But anyhow, so I was, there was all the tributes to George Bush last month when he died, George H.W. Bush. They had that funeral service in which he was compared to Jesus and George Washington. And I was happy to get a piece in that, you know, that came out on the day before the funeral that said, look, you know, there's a lot more to this story. You know, here's someone who ramped up the drug war, a lot of other abuses, and the pardon stuff could set up a precedent for what Trump's people could do to kind of save Trump's tail if he needs to do that. So, everybody seemed to have forgotten Bush's pardons, but Bush saved his own tail with those because a number of the people who he pardoned could have turned state's evidence against him, justifiably.
Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking of which, there's this new Seymour Hersh piece. Let's see if I can get him on later this afternoon. The Vice President's Men in the London Review of Books that came out last week. Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen that, but Hersh does wonderful stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, you got to read it. So I'd be really interested to know what you think of it since you were reporting on what was going on in D.C. during that time. And I was just a kid back then. Not to call you old or anything, because I know I am.
Hey, you know, elder abuse. I get no respect. Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah. But anyways, so the way he portrays it is totally different than the way I ever understood it before through my own ignorance, or I don't know if anybody ever told it this way before or what. But he just says that the entire Iran-Contra operation that was operating out of the vice president's office was a completely different animal than what was going on at CIA. And that it was essentially proto-JSOC working for Bush Sr. through an admiral on the staff of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and they had these extremely completely deniable missions against the Soviets all around the world, including in Latin America, and that they were the ones who burnt the Iran-Contra operation by the CIA because they were, you know, thought Casey was stupid and reckless, and they had their own operation against Ortega that they were pursuing in Nicaragua that they thought he was messing up and this and that, so...
Interesting. I should check that out. What publication was that in?
It's the London Review of Books, the Vice President's Men.
Okay. There was Hersh had a very nice memoir that came out, I guess, last year. I did a long piece review of that for American Conservative, and there were so many good things in Hersh's book. I mean, he's very, very worth reading.
Yeah, I really need to get that. I have so much to read. So little time.
Caffeine, that's the answer.
You know, but that does raise something. I forget if this was something that I read in your USA Today piece or something else about Barr. It wasn't just the pardons, but it was also some of his decisions about, I guess, almost in a David Addington fashion, these kind of rulings or agreements about the plenary and unlimited and unitary and this and that commander-in-chief type powers of Bush Sr. before the Bush Jr. years ever came. You know
right,
about that?
Yeah. Yep. That's something I read about. I haven't dug into it, but yeah, there are lots of reasons to be concerned here.
I wonder why. Well, I don't know. Seems like a big mistake for a guy like Trump to appoint George Bush Sr.'s guy, but I guess he's just banking on this guy says that presidents can do whatever they want, and so I'll just have to go with that, even if he's Bush Sr.'s guy, something like that. What a compromise to have to make.
I don't know. It seemed like there were a lot of other folks who could do it, would be better for the job, would not have some of the taints that William Barr has. But, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on in the background at the White House. I have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, well, I don't think they do either. All right. Well, listen, I'm going to keep reading your articles about what comes out.
Okay, well, thanks. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for the chat, and I hope you stay out of trouble. And Rocky Top, Tennessee, you gotta hear this song. It's a great kind of anti-government song.
Cool. All right, well, I will check that out. It's in my notes.
It's in your notes. All right, that's a good place for it.
Thanks, Jim.
All right, thanks, Scott. Good luck.
All right, you guys. That's Jim Bovard. JimBovard.com is his website. Also, USA Today, where he's on the editorial board there. And you can find him at the American Conservative as well. This one is there. It's called William Barr's Connection to Ruby Ridge, Defending FBI Snipers. And seriously, read his books too. Attention Deficit Democracy is my favorite one, but they're all really good.
Wish that I was on a rocky top down in the Tennessee hills. Ain't no smoggy smoke on rocky top, ain't no telephone bills. Once I had a girl on rocky top, half by the other half cat. Why not me, but sweet ass soda pop, I still dream about that. Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. Good old Rocky Top, Tennessee. Rocky Top, Tennessee. Once two strangers climbed on Rocky Top looking for a moonshine still. Strangers, they ain't come down from Rocky Top, I reckon they never will. Corn won't grow at all on Rocky Top, dirt's too rocky by far. That's why all the folks on Rocky Top get their corn from a jar. Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. Good old Rocky Top, Rocky Top, Tennessee. Rocky Top, Tennessee. Rocky Top, Tennessee.
Rocky Top, Tennessee. All right, y'all, thanks. Find me at libertarianinstitute.org, at scotthorton.org, antiwar.com, and reddit.com/Scott Horton Show. Oh yeah, and read my book, Fool's Errand, Timed and the War in Afghanistan.